We'll pick up the countdown shortly here. In H-minus 10 seconds, the countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you A Step Farther Out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society. It is the 15th of March in the glorious future year of 2025, the day every year when we honor Julius Caesar's efforts at calendar reform by repeatedly stabbing him in the back. No, I don't understand it either, dear listeners, I don't understand it. But I am coming to you today by pre-recording for two very good reasons. The first is that I'm working on a wireless internet connection which is just not stable enough for live streaming. And yes, I could, in principle, get a wired connection, but only by completely disarranging my hostess living room, which is generally frowned upon and considered rude behavior in a guest. But the second reason is that at the time that this actually plays, I may not be able to speak comprehensibly. You see, I think I've mentioned before that I have one piece of dental work in my adult life, and it has been a never-ending source of trouble, a thorn in my flesh. Well, it's done it again. Yesterday I was walking along, minding my own business. I had a piece of toffee, yes, but not a particularly sticky piece of toffee, pardon me there. And the crown just popped off, boop, just like so. Thankfully, it came off intact this time instead of coming apart into splinters the way it did last time. So I'm hoping that I can get a dentist to clean the surfaces and put in some more cement and just reattach it. Fingers crossed, that's going to be my Saturday. It should have been my Friday, but apparently none of the dentists around here were willing to get me in. But there's some kind of an emergency dental clinic on Saturday, which only sees emergencies, and I think a lost crown qualifies as an emergency. Anyhow, I'm likely to get quite a bit of the sort of topical or local dental anesthetic, which makes your mouth musculature kind of flack, so you can't speak clearly. And I would imagine that I will not be speaking clearly at 1930 UTC, assuming that everything goes according to plan. Now, is there anything for me to talk about? Well, again, I don't plan on giving you a full-length show today, but I did think I should check in. Especially since, let's see, Heath Rowe, the editor of APA-L, or Official Collator is the title, Official Collator of APA-L, which is one of these science fiction fandom things where everybody sends in a bunch of contributions and they get mailed back out to all the contributors, has said that he's been listening to my shows in sort of reverse order. And so, hello to you. What else is there to be said? Ah, yes. Then on Sunday, I am heading back to Munich. And so, if heaven is merciful, I should be able to resume doing live-type shows beginning Tuesday. But it also means that, stuff full of dental anesthetic or not, I'm probably, at the time this airs, packing all my stuff. Repacking. It'll be good, for the first time in a month, to be on a bed which is wider than single size, and I don't fear falling out of. But do I have anything useful to talk about today? I mean, it's difficult, of course, to say anything useful in the current world political climate. You have presumably heard about the head honcho in the USA and his continuing insanity. That's really the only way I can describe it. It is the behavior of a person completely decoupled from reality. But he's far from the only one. It may have missed crossing your attention, but late last year, in December of last year, Kim Jong-un, the glorious leader of North Korea, summarily threw out what has been the ideological foundation of North Korea since 1950, namely the idea of peaceful reunification with South Korea, which historically has at least been based on the idea of a federal union in which the DPRK and the ROK would continue to exist side by side. Now, this was never very likely to work, simply because of the incredible economic contrast. You know, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, led by the Workers' Party of Korea, is economically moribund at best, whereas the Republic of Korea is an economic powerhouse. And then both of them have cripplingly low birth rates. So, that's going to be very complicated. But Kim Jong-un issued a bunch of orders, one of which involved summarily demolishing this enormous reunification arch that was supposed to demonstrate and sort of encode in its dimensions and proportions various aspects of the ideal of Korean reunification. His proposal of record at this point is apparently military conquest of South Korea. And it's difficult, as I've often said, to see how that would work, because one just gets the impression of a single jeep full of, they seem to have 12-star generals in North Korea, rolling up to the steps of Seoul City Hall to accept the surrender of the mayor, while the entire North Korean army has vanished mysteriously, along with all the laundry off of people's washing lines and all of the help wanted signs in people's windows. Because for all the, what they call, Song-un, or Army First strategy of North Korea, that everything they produce gets poured into weapons, not into consumer goods, that all of the food and everything else they can produce gets directed first to the army, still, even people in the army, their standard of living is much lower than that of the average South Korean. And once they see the South Korean convenience stores and coffee shops, you know, I'm not saying they're all going to be doing Gangnam Style, but it's enough to make you really rethink everything you've been told about how you have been living in the workers' paradise, the absolute best Korea that can possibly be, while the South Koreans have been suffering horribly. But what do I know? People seem to convince themselves of the most absurd things and to then proceed to act on that conviction. And what can one really do about it? I wonder. But speaking of people being convinced of the most absurd things, I'm going to talk here again for a moment about what's been called generative artificial intelligence, and which I've argued before isn't anything resembling artificial intelligence. But someone, I had an exchange with someone online who had come up with a hypothesis which seems to me extraordinarily likely and quite terrifying, which is that the way that so-called generative AI works, its sort of pattern matching activity, is exactly what you use to draw people into a destructive cult. And many people, far more people than you'd ever think, at some point in their lives are vulnerable to this exact kind of psychological manipulation. Now, most people don't encounter an active cult leader during the periods in their lives when they are most susceptible. But for those who do, they can be drawn not only to suicide, but also to mass homicide, as in the case of Aum Shinrikyo in Japan, the folks, apocalypse cultists, right, who planted chemical weapons in the Tokyo subway. And if they had been a little more successful, could have killed hundreds of thousands of people. And so to think of that as being something which is available 24/7 on demand, that Google and Microsoft and Facebook are all rushing to add it into all their products, so that everywhere you go, you're constantly in contact with one of these things, which is, if not intentionally designed, nevertheless incredibly well adapted to prey on your insecurities and mental weaknesses, because we all have them, I have them as much as anyone else, and draw you down into the vortex which leads to ego death. This is incredibly terrifying. Because it's not at all impossible to imagine a billion people ensnared in destructive cult-type behavior without any cult leaders necessary at all, right? And if anything were to lead to Frank Herbert's Butlerian Jihad, I think that might be it. It's an absolutely terrifying and also horrifying prospect. The idea, I mean, already, right, already the internet, beginning, oh gosh, with the Heaven's Gate cultists back in the 1990s, right, and that was basically back in Usenet days. And now, with a smartphone at the tips of so many people's fingers all the time, which has already been shown to make it easy to become enmeshed in destructive and self-destructive patterns of behavior, the idea of just automating the whole process of being drawn into a cult, well, that ought to terrify you. And this is not the show where I try to terrify people, right? This is the show where I try to talk about technology and the future of humanity in a positive way, to show that we indeed, we have ways out of the conundrums which currently confront us. But at the same time, it is important to recognize the real dangers that the sort of, I will say, self-deluded techno-optimists represent. Because it's not as though these, quote, AIs are creating themselves, right? That was always the scenario that people pushing the idea of the singularity, right, Ray Kurzweil and so on, talking about machines reprogramming themselves to create more efficient versions of themselves, etc. That's not the scenario we're looking at here. People like Sam Altman are creating these things deliberately. And to judge by their behavior, right, to judge by the behavior of the people creating these things, I think that they have already been cultized, programmed. I don't know whether they've been programmed by their own creations or whether indeed they formed, and this can happen, a loosely affiliated group of extremists and fantasists who effectively programmed each other in a cult-like way. That can happen. It does happen. You don't always have to have a single charismatic leader figure. But I do think that if we say AI is a cult, we need to understand that this is not speaking metaphorically. So what do we do about it, right? All the warnings of people who know better haven't stopped the proliferation of Bluetooth and Wi-Fi enabled light bulbs. There's no reason, there's no sense in having your refrigerator connect to the internet, and yet many people buy refrigerators which connect to the internet, either because they don't care, or because those have become the easiest ones to get. So clearly, just criticism isn't succeeding here. There are clearly some mechanisms at work which do not favor humanity. And people like Cory Doctorow and so on have been talking about this for a long time, but they're obviously not being taken with enough seriousness. So I want you to think about mechanisms which don't favor humanity and what you can do to oppose them, to claw back a bit of that humanity at a time. Because that's what we really must do. That is a core part of the task which lies upon us now. Clawing back space for humanity. Rehumanize yourself, the police said. 45 years ago or so, that was a hit for them, yeah? Oh, before I forget to mention it, Dr. Doofenshmirtz collects another nickel. You know, if I had a nickel for every time a lunar lander had toppled over on landing, I'd have 3 nickels, which is not a lot, but it's still a surprise that it happened 3 times. Well, I should give an honorable mention to the Firefly Aerospace lander, which had just the other night, we had a lunar eclipse. I don't know if you saw it. I certainly didn't. It was cloudy here. But their lunar lander captured a beautiful photograph of the sun being occulted by the Earth, which, of course, is what a lunar eclipse looks like from the moon. And so I feel like congratulating them for that. Beautiful picture. Anyhow, I'll see you on the flip side. As I say, I expect to be back in Munich beginning Tuesday and able to resume a more regular schedule of shows. Until then, As ever, write cards and letters of comment to Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas 76101, United States of America, and I'll check that mailbox next time I'm in the USA, whenever that proves to be. Other than that, if you enjoy these broadcasts and want to send me some funds, paypal.me/PrometheusLives is an option for a one-time payment. patreon.com/man_and_atom for a recurring contribution. And in any case, I'll probably send you some nice mail if I happen to get hold of your mailing address. That is neither a threat nor a warning, it's just a fact. Well, so long, and thanks for all the fish. They say it's the wealthy countries who have burned all this fossil fuel, which has added this carbon dioxide to the environment, that is apparently the cause of these problems we're experiencing. Why is it that we have to suffer while they benefit? Right? That, and they also say, why is it that they say we shouldn't use fossil fuels in order to improve our situation? Right? That the people in the poorer countries don't want bad things to happen to them. Well, that's not such a strange thing, right? And they see that the wealthy countries, with their still largely fossil fuel-based energy systems, are the ones with the resilience to cope with these changes. And they say, well, why shouldn't we be allowed to do the same thing? Right? Why shouldn't we do the same thing? And there are various attempts to cope with and mitigate this. You know, there's proposals that the wealthy countries should set up funds where they will reimburse the poor countries for loss and damage, which doesn't actually build up the resiliency of the poor countries at all, does it? I would say that the solution to this one, at least, really obviously is nuclear energy. For the wealthy countries to cut out burning fossil fuels and shift over to nuclear energy, because it is the source of energy that is feasible to shift over to, right? All these so-called transitions to renewable energy, they haven't really resulted in anything of the kind. They haven't really resulted in decreased use of fossil fuels. And at the same time, providing energy for the less wealthy countries so that they can make themselves resilient. And again, I've called in the past for the equivalent of a nuclear Marshall Plan. But the thing I want to bring up in this context of peace on earth, goodwill toward men, is that the nuclear weapons states under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, they have abrogated their responsibility. You know, the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty is supposed to be this grand bargain whereby the signatories who do not have nuclear weapons will accept intrusions on their sovereignty. Intrusions on their sovereignty of an entirely unprecedented nature and scope. That they promise not to make nuclear weapons, not to attempt to acquire nuclear weapons, not to help anyone else build nuclear weapons, and they promise to submit to a system of inspection, internationally organized inspections, to make sure that they don't do that. In return for which, the nuclear weapons states, right, which also happen to be the Big Five, the permanent members of the United Nations Security Council, pledged to provide assistance in the uses of nuclear energy for peaceful purposes. And within a few years after that treaty was ratified and entered into force, the nuclear weapons states had completely and absolutely abrogated that pledge. They set up organizations like the London Suppliers Group, the whole purpose of which was to stop nuclear energy technologies from being used by poorer countries. Why? Well, the only realistic, right, I mean, it was always couched in terms of weapons proliferation, but we're talking about countries that were signatories of the NPT, right? The truth is, the only real motive which I have ever been able to adduce for this behavior was the fear that the poorer countries would become less poor. They would stop being suppliers of labor and raw materials and become competitors, which really shows a complete lack of understanding of the global community. It really shows a complete lack of the viewpoint from Apollo 8. That is what we must have, friends. We must have that viewpoint that sees the Earth as a whole, that sees the Earth as a little blue and white marble that you can cover with your thumb stretched out at the end of your arm. Friends, so long as the weapons states remain in flagrant violation of the Non-Proliferation Treaty in this way, how can we expect countries to engage in negotiations towards disarmament, towards pacific settlement of disputes, towards de-escalation, towards greater levels of international cooperation, internationalization, open borders? How can we expect any of these things when the most powerful countries in the world, the countries with the arsenals of weapons poised to annihilate our entire civilization, the countries with the massive armies, the countries with the massive economies, those countries solemnly pledged to give every kind of assistance without stinting to the other countries of the world in return for those other countries' pledge not to build nuclear weapons. And then the nuclear weapons states completely, utterly abrogated that agreement. How can we expect anybody to enter into good faith negotiations and processes for building a peaceful world, not just a world of ceasefires, not just a world of frozen conflicts and cold wars, but a world of peace, a world in which everyone can have confidence when he goes to bed at night that he will not be bombed before morning, and it doesn't matter if it's a conventional bomb or a nuclear one, when it lands on your house? How can we expect peace to grow in the world if the countries that have the most to say about it remain completely uninterested in fulfilling the most solemn obligations they took upon themselves specifically for the promotion of peace and the prevention of war? You know, I've read to you before the preamble to the Charter of the United Nations, right? Which talks about the incredible destruction of war and how the Big Five, who just coincidentally happened to be, right, the nuclear weapons states, the United States, the Soviet Union, China, France, and Britain. The Big Five and all the other countries associated in it with them, to prevent, so that future nations need not be scourged under the lash of war. Friends, I don't know what the solution is, but I believe, and I've thought for some time, that the non-weapon states of the Non-Proliferation Treaty have got to start insisting on the enforcement of its promises, and they've got to start working
countries like Argentina and Brazil have got to start working together to freeze out the weapons states and build an alternative for themselves.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.